Chapter 9. Known, even before you gave me those letters after my mother's death, even before that, I suspected. I don't know how it began. Perhaps from little things you let drop. You and she, and resemblances that I couldn't help seeing. In myself, how on earth could you suppose I shouldn't guess? I always thought you gave me the letters as a way of telling me. Mr. Crewe rose slowly from his chair. The letters? Dolbrowski's letters? Ronald nodded with white lips. Why, you must remember giving them to me the day after the funeral. Mr. Crewe nodded back. Oh, of course. I wanted you to have everything your mother valued. Well, how could I help knowing after that? Knowing what? Mr. Crewe stood staring helplessly at his son. Suddenly his look caught at a clue that seemed to confront it with a deeper bewilderment. Why, you thought those letters? Dolbrowski's letters. You thought they meant ... Oh, it wasn't only the letters. There were so many other signs. My love of music, all my feelings about life. And art, and when you gave me the letters I thought you must mean me to know. Mr. Crewe had grown quiet. His lips were firm, and his small eyes looked out steadily from their creased lids. To know that you were Fortune Dolbrowski's son? Ronald made a mute sign of assent. I see. And what did you mean to do? I meant to wait till I could earn my living, and then repay you. As far as I can ever repay you. But now that there's a chance of my marrying. And your generosity overwhelms me, I'm obliged to speak. I see, said Mr. Crewe again. He let himself down into his chair, looking steadily and not unkindly at the young man. Sit down, Ronald. Let's talk. Ronald made a protesting movement. Is anything to be gained by it? You can't change me, change what I feel. The reading of those letters transformed my whole life. I was a boy till then. They made a man of me. From that moment I understood myself. He paused, and then looked up at Mr. Crewe's face. Don't imagine I don't appreciate your kindness, your extraordinary generosity. But I can't go through life in disguise. And I want you to know that I have not won Daisy under false pretenses. Mr. Crewe started up with the first expletive Ronald had ever heard on his lips. You damned young fool, you haven't told her. Ronald raised his head quickly. Oh, you don't know her, sir. She thinks no worse of me for knowing my secret. She is above and beyond all such conventional prejudices. She's proud of my parentage. He straightened his slim young shoulders. Yes, I'm proud of it. Yes, sir, proud of it. Mr. Crewe sank back into his seat with a dry laugh. Well, you ought to be. You come of good stock. And your father's son, every inch of you. He laughed again, as though the humor of the situation grew on him with its closer contemplation. Yes, I've always felt that, Ronald murmured, flushing. Your father's son, and no mistake. Mr. Crewe leaned forward. You're the son of as big a fool as yourself. And here he sits, Ronald Crewe. The young man's flush deepened to crimson, but Mr. Crewe checked his reply with a decisive gesture. Here he sits, with all your young nonsense still alive in him. Don't you see the likeness? If you don't, I'll tell you the story of those letters. Ronald stared. What do you mean? Don't they tell their own story? I suppose they did, when I gave them to you, but you've given it a twist that needs straightening out. Mr. Crewe squared his elbows on the table, and looked at the young man across the gift books and the dyed pampas grass. I wrote all the letters that Dolbrowski answered. Ronald gave back his look in frowning perplexity. Why, you wrote them? I don't understand. His letters are all addressed to my mother. Yes. And he thought he was corresponding with her. But my mother, what did she think? Mr. Crewe hesitated, puckering his thick lids. Well, I guess she kinder thought it was a joke. Your mother didn't think about things much. Ronald continued to bend a puzzled frown on the question. I don't understand, he he reiterated. Mr. Crew cleared his throat with a nervous laugh. Well, I don't know as you ever will quite. But this is the way it came about. I had a toughish time of it when I was young. Oh, I don't mean so much the fight I had to put up to make my way. There was always plenty of fight in me. But inside of myself it was kinder lonesome. And the outside didn't attract callers. He laughed again, with an apologetic gesture toward his broad blinking face. When I went round with the other young fellows, I was always the forlorn hope, the one that had to eat the drumsticks and dance with the leftovers. As sure as there was a blighter at a picnic, I had to swing her, and feed her, and drive her home. And all the time I was mad after all the things you've got, poetry and music, and all the joy forever business. So there were the pair of us, my face and my imagination chained together, and fighting, and hating each other like poison. Then your mother came along, and took pity on me. It sets up a gawky fellow to find a girl who ain't ashamed to be seen walking with him Sundays. And I was grateful to your mother, and we got along first rate. Only I couldn't say things to her, and she couldn't answer. Well, one day, a few months after we were married, Dolbrus guy came to New York, and the whole place went wild about him. I'd never heard any good music, but I'd always had an inkling of what it must be like, though I couldn't tell you to this day how I knew. Well, your mother read about him in the papers too, and she thought it'd be the swagger thing to go to New York and hear him play, so we went. I'll never forget that evening. Your mother wasn't easily stirred up, she never seemed to need to let off steam. But that night she seemed to understand the way I felt. And when we got back to the hotel, she said suddenly, I'd like to tell him how I feel. I'd like to sit right down and write to him. Would you? I said. So would I. There was paper and pens there before us, and I pulled a sheet toward me and began to write. Is this what you'd like to say to him? I asked her when the letter was done. And she got pink and said, I don't understand it, but it's lovely. And she copied it out and signed her name to it and sent it. Mr. Grew paused, and Ronald sat silent, with lowered eyes. That's how it began, and that's where I thought it would end. But it didn't, because Dolbrus guy answered. His first letter was dated January 10, 1872. I guess you'll find I'm correct. Well, I went back to hear him again, and I wrote him after the performance, and he answered again. And after that we kept it up for 6 months. Your mother always copied the letters and signed them. She seemed to think it was a kinder joke, and she was proud of his answering my letters. But she never went back to New York to hear him, though I saved up enough to give her the treat again. She was too lazy, and she let me go without her. I heard him 3 times in New York, and in the spring he came to Wingfield and played once at the Academy. Your mother was sick and couldn't go, so I went alone. After the performance I meant to get one of the directors to take me in to see him, but when the time came, I just went back home and wrote to him instead. And the month after, before he went back to Europe, he sent your mother a last little note, and that picture hanging up there. Mr. Grew paused again, and both men lifted their eyes to the photograph. Is that all? Ronald slowly asked. That's all, every bit of it, said Mr. Grew. And my mother never even spoke to Dolbrowski? Never. She never even saw him, but that once in New York at his concert. The blood crept again to Ronald's face. Are you sure of that, sir? He asked in a trembling voice. Sure as I am that I'm sitting here. Why, she was too lazy to look at his letters after the first novelty wore off. She copied the answers just to humor me, but she always said she couldn't understand what we wrote. But how could you go on with such a correspondence? It's incredible. Mr. Grew looked at his son thoughtfully. I suppose it is, to you. You've only had to put out your hand and get the things I was starving for: music and good talk and ideas. Those letters gave me all that. You've read them, and you know that Dolbrus guy was not only a great musician, but a great man. There was nothing beautiful he didn't see, nothing fine he didn't feel. For 6 months I breathed his air, and I've lived on it ever since. Do you begin to understand a little now?
Yes, a little.
But why write in my mother's name? Why make it a sentimental correspondence? Mr. Grew reddened to his bald temples. W.Y., I tell you it began that way, as a kinder joke. And when I saw that the first letter pleased and interested him, I was afraid to tell him I couldn't tell him. Do you suppose he'd gone on writing if he'd ever seen me, Ronnie? Ronald suddenly looked at him with new eyes. B-Buddy must have thought your letters very beautiful, to go on as he did, he broke out. Well, I did my best, said Mr. Grew modestly. Ronald pursued his idea. W, where are all your letters, I wonder? Weren't they returned to you at his death? Mr. Grew laughed.
L Lord, no.
I guess he had trunks and trunks full of better ones. I guess queens and empresses wrote to him. I should have liked to see your letters, the young man insisted.
Well, they weren't bad, said Mr. Grew dryly.
But I'll tell you one thing, Ronnie, he added suddenly. Ronald raised his head with a quick glance, and Mr. Grew continued, colon, I'll tell you where the best of those letters is, it's in you. If it hadn't been for that one look at life, I couldn't have made you what you are. Oh, I know you've done a good deal of your own making, but I've been there behind you all the time. And you'll never know the work I've spared you, and the time I've saved you. Fortune Dolbrus guy helped me do that. I never saw things in little again after I'd looked at them with him. And I tried to give you the big view from the stars, so that's what became of my letters. Mr. Grew paused, and for a long time Ronald sat motionless, his elbows on the table, his face dropped on his hands. Suddenly Mr. Grew's touch fell on his shoulder. Look at here, Ronald Grew, do you want me to tell you how you're feeling at this minute? Just a mite let down, after all, at the idea that you ain't the romantic figure you'd got to think yourself. Well, that's natural enough too, but I'll tell you what it proves. It proves you're my son right enough, if any more proof was needed. For it's just the kind of fool nonsense I used to feel at your age, and if there's anybody here to laugh at, it's myself, and not you. And you can laugh at me just as much as you like. The Daunt Diana, I. What's become of the Daunt Diana? You mean to say you never heard the sequel? Ringham Finney threw himself back into his chair with the smile of the collector who has a good thing to show. He knew he had a good listener, at any rate. I don't think much of Ringham's snuff boxes, but his anecdotes are usually worthwhile. He's a psychologist astray among bibelots, and the best bits he brings back from his raids on Christie's and the Hotel Drought are the fragments of human nature he picks up on those historic battlefields. If his flair in enamel had been half as good, we should have heard of the Finney collection by this time. He really has queer fatuous investigator. An unusually sensitive touch for the human texture, and the specimens he gathers into his museum of heterogeneous memories have almost always some mark of the rare and chosen. I felt, therefore, that I was really to be congratulated on the fact that I didn't know what had become of the Daunt Diana, and on having before me a long evening in which to learn. I had just led my friend back, after an excellent dinner at Foy's, to the shabby pleasant sitting room of my Rive Gauche hotel, and I knew that, once I had settled him in a good armchair, and put a box of cigars at his elbow, I could trust him not to budge till I had the story. 2. You remember old Neve, of course? Little Humphrey Neve, I mean. We used to see him pottering about Rome years ago. He lived in two tiny rooms over a wine shop, on polenta and lentils, and prowled among the refuse of the Rapetta whenever he had a few soldi to spend. But you've been out of the collector's world for so long that you may not know what happened to him afterward.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.